Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
The government has declared a fresh state of emergency after a call from governors. The move is being challenged in the courts, and police have dropped an investigation into the alleged kidnapping of the Prime Minister's son. Restrictions imposed by the Czech government to contain the spread of COVID-19 remain in place after it declared a new state of emergency from midnight. MPs had refused to extend the state of emergency beyond February 14th. However, the government acted in response to a request from the governors of the country's 14 regions. They said the state of danger they could declare wouldn't give them adequate powers to enforce coronavirus measures. The new state of emergency has been declared until the end of the month. In the interim, the cabinet is expected to draft new pandemic legislation that would enable it to respond to the crisis without a state of emergency. The first legal action against Sunday's fresh declaration of a state of emergency has been taken. The suit, filed on Monday, asserts that the government's step was unconstitutional and calls on the Prague Municipal Court to overturn it, a lawyer for the plaintiff told the Czech news agency. A number of lawyers have questioned the government's declaration of a new state of emergency. 2,832 new cases of COVID-19 were recorded in the Czech Republic on Sunday, around 400 more than the same day the previous week. There are currently 103,000 registered active cases. There's been a slight rise in the number hospitalized with the virus, which now stands at 5,553. Almost 1,100 are in a critical condition. The National COVID Risk Index is for a second day at 77 points out of 100, placing it in the highest bracket. The reproduction number fell slightly to 1.03. Prime Minister Andrej Babiš says trials of coronavirus testing at Czech schools will begin on Thursday. He said they were likely to be conducted in the central Bohemian town of Sedlčany. On Monday, Mr. Babiš had been due to visit neighbouring Austria, where COVID testing at schools has been launched. However, fog prevented his flight. The Czech government's Council for Health Risks is due to discuss school testing and vaccinations for teachers and other staff on Tuesday. There are plans for final year students and ninth grade elementary school pupils to start returning to school from the 1st of March. After 2 years, Czech police have shelved an investigation centred on Andrej Babiš Jr., the son of the country's prime minister, news site eroslas.cz said on Monday. The former said he'd been abducted to Russian-occupied Crimea by his carer. However, detectives concluded that no crime had been committed, the State Attorney's Office for Prague 1 said on its website. Andrej Babiš Jr. told a news outlet in 2017 that he'd been taken to Crimea to prevent him giving evidence in a fraud case. His father rejected that assertion, saying that his son was mentally ill. Karolina Muchová has reached the quarterfinals at tennis's Australian Open. After a slow start, the Czech, who's 24, overcame Elise Mertens of Belgium 7-6, 7-5 to reach the last eight in Melbourne for the first time in her career. Muchová, ranked 25th in the world, will face either Shelby Rogers or world number one Ashley Barty for a place in her first ever Grand Slam semi-final. And finally, a quick look at the weather. It should be mainly overcast in the Czech Republic on Tuesday with a maximum temperature of 2 degrees Celsius. Daytime highs should then rise through the week to about 6 degrees Celsius at the weekend. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that is the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, Czech government manages to extend state of emergency after joint request from regional governors. And later on, we discuss the history and future prospects of the Visegrad 4, which is celebrating 30 years since its foundation. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The state of emergency in the Czech Republic, which grants the government extraordinary powers to enact lockdown rules, will continue until the end of February. The government was able to extend the current system after a joint request from all of the country's regional governors provided a new legal justification. However, this came under the condition that it revises the effectiveness of current restrictions. Tom McEncrough has the details.
Earlier last week, it looked as though the near five-month-long continual state of emergency would come to an abrupt end on February 14th, due to the government's request to extend the time period, not having received sufficient backing in the Chamber of Deputies. This would have effectively meant the end of the ongoing lockdown in the Czech Republic, because it would make it legal for shops, gastronomy businesses, cultural and sports facilities to reopen. However, a last-moment appeal from the country's 14 regional governors, that means Prague included, allowed the government to extend the state of emergency by 14 days until February 28th. At a press briefing on Sunday afternoon, Finance Minister Alena Schillerová explained the legal reasoning behind this.
Vláda se pečlivě zaobírala tím, že dnešní...
The government paid careful attention to making sure that today's decision was in accordance with the Constitution. The extension of the state of emergency is in line with legal requirements because it is based on a new factual situation, namely that we have received a request from all of the country's regional governors to extend it.
O vyhlášení nouzového stavu.
The validity of this reasoning has since been attacked by the Speaker of the Senate, Miloš Vystrčil, from the opposition Civic Democrats, who threatened to send a complaint to the Constitutional Court. However, he and several other leading senators have since said that they will wait to see the response from the lower house of parliament. The extension of the state of emergency means that there are no immediate changes to the current lockdown rules. However, there is one exception. From Monday, administrative offices have had their opening times restored to standard full-time working hours. The Association of Regional Governors made this a condition in their appeal to extend the state of emergency. Martin Kuba of the Civic Democrats, who is the governor of the South Moravian region and the head of the Association of Regional Governors, told Czech television on Sunday that there are other conditions the government has agreed to.
Our conditions to the Prime Minister were that the extension is only for 14 days and that negotiations with the opposition have to take place on Tuesday, where pandemic-related legislature will be discussed. Furthermore, we want several of the current measures to be revised. We also request that the government discusses the measures it has in place with us every 10 days. The first thing we want to hear from the government is how they plan to ease restrictions on shops, services, sport and culture.
Several governors have indicated that they will not ask for another extension after the 14-day period runs out. It seems that the reaching of a compromise in the lower house remains key if the government wants to maintain control over managing the pandemic.
Tom McEncrough with that report. Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. Now, before we move on, here is something you may find of interest.
At some point, every sentence in this book has been spoken. That was our aim, to capture the little oddities of each of us and preserve them for all time, the little quirks.
I sat down one quiet evening and started sorting through the memories of my own life and the life of my parents. I wrote down these fragments on scraps of paper or on clean pages torn out of my children's old exercise books. And one incident in my memory would call forth the one before and the one after.
The real lives of people and what actually went on and how they thought and what they did. It's an unusual thing for a family to have a chronicle like that.
No Night So Dark, a 7-part serial telling the story of the remarkable Vels family. Coming up soon on Radio Prague International.
And of course, do check out everything else we have to offer, including a new series on Czech inventions titled Czech Made. You'll find all the details on Radio Prague's webpage, that's at radio.cz. But now it's time for our main feature. The Visegrad Four, a loose alliance of Central European states comprising the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Poland and Hungary, is celebrating 30 years since its founding in the historic town of Visegrad on the 15th of February 1991. What led to its creation shortly after the fall of communism? How has it changed over the years and what are its future prospects? Daniela Lazarová discussed these and other issues with Jan Kovář from the Prague-based Institute of International Relations and began by asking him to explain what purpose the alliance was meant to serve.
Well, basically there were two common goals. One, I would say, more important. The other one a little bit less important. And the more important one was obviously to, you know, help the countries to coordinate their efforts, you know, share experiences in order to facilitate the three countries and later four countries returning back to Europe, so integration into Euro-Atlantic structures. And this basically meant NATO and the EU. So this was basically the primary goal, the primary purpose. And the secondary one was to improve cross-border, interstate, inter-regional cooperation in many fields from, you know, infrastructure to societal level, to cultural cooperation, to culture exchange, to economic issues, and also including cooperation in the field of civil society, NGOs, research, and similar educational issues.
So they helped each other to in the transition to a market economy and a democracy in the post-communist years.
You can put it like this as well, because especially the cooperation in the field of civil society at a societal level, cultural cooperation, those are all issues related directly to democracy. While infrastructural cooperation in the economic field, and you know, share of best practices and exchange of ideas, was also directly linked to the transition towards free market.
But as you say, one of the stated goals was to create a new Central Europe while integrating it within the broader European project. How successful have the V4 been in this respect?
Well, if we look at it through the perspective of those four countries becoming members of NATO and EU within a decade or so, from the establishment of the Visegrad group, we have to agree or we have to say that indeed this was a successful effort because it's been quite short time, let's say, especially if you look at how long Western Balkans countries are now trying to join the EU. So if you compare these periods, then, you know, joining NATO within a decade and the EU a little bit later was basically a huge achievement of those four countries. And basically also of the Visegrad group. So the V4 was, in this primary goal, was very, very successful, I would say.
When they achieved this goal and the countries joined the EU, they revised the raison d'etre of the V4 and they decided to stick together in order to reinforce regional positions. How successful have they been in that? And are their positions not growing increasingly diverse?
Well, indeed, you're right that in 2004, after joining the EU, there was the Kroměříž Declaration signed in the beautiful Czech city of Kroměříž that outlined the main goal of V4 as a cooperation or strengthening the cooperation and coordination of the four countries within the European Union. And for some time, there was you know, this cooperation was on a standstill. We can say that between 2004 and 2010 or so, there was not really much going on. Visegrad kind of disappeared from the radar of the four countries' European policies. It was not visible in the media and for the people. Since 2009, 2010, this has started to change as the countries established coordination joint meetings before the European Council summit and before meetings, ministerial meetings of the Council of the EU. So, you know, after some standstill period, there was an increased cooperation in terms of coordinating and trying to strengthen their efforts to coordinate positions and actions at the EU level. And this is quite logical because, you know, except for Poland, all of those countries are smaller, mid-sized member states. And they kind of fear that they will be, well, their voices will not be heard in the EU, especially as they are all new member states. So V4 was supposed to basically strengthen their voice in the EU. You know, and there were some success in this. But at the same time, as you asked, that, you know, whether there is a divergence of positions over time, I would not say that there is a divergence of positions over time. There was always divergence of positions. What became clear increasingly is that Visegrad Group will, and this is quite logical, but will become, you know, a mechanism to build ad hoc issue-specific coalitions when and if the interests of the V4 countries align, when they have common interests. When they don't, V4 simply will not be used. And this is also reflected in V4 countries being able to put together common positions when they have common interests, such as during the migration crisis, and not being able to do so when they don't have common interests. And just look at the negotiation of the last multi-annual financial framework of the EU and its connection to the rule of law and the negotiation, especially in December 2020. There was a huge divergence, and Czech Republic and Slovakia were basically trying to make it very clear that the position of Hungary and Poland is not the position of the V4. So they're basically distancing themselves. So this is basically how Visegrad works and probably also should work, because this is how EU policymaking really works.
At the height of the migration crisis, they were regarded as troublemakers in the European Union. Has that changed? How are they regarded today?
Well, this has not changed completely or altogether because of another issue. And this is the issue of rule of law that I have just mentioned in connection to the EU's budget or multi-annual financial framework. And this was another instance of V4 becoming toxic in the EU, along with the V4's position during the migration crisis. So what I would basically say is that V4 has managed to put itself on the map in EU policymaking as a regional coalition-making or joint position-making body. However, the problem here is that it also has a reputation of being rather reactive and usually negatively reacting to proposals circulated at the EU level. So instead of having positive agenda of what should be done and how things should be done, how policies can be reformed, the V4 usually is seen as having position what should not be done, why we don't want this, or why we don't want that to happen in EU politics. So next to the toxicity because of the V4's position during the migration crisis and the lack of solidarity, and toxicity of Poland and Hungary, which, you know, also goes along with the remaining two countries of the V4, along with this toxicity, you also have this vision or reputation of reactivity, passivity, or negativity. And this is probably the main problem of the V4 when it comes to its image in the eyes of the EU partners.
In this respect, does it not hurt the Czech Republic to be associated with this? Or would you say that the benefits it gets in pushing through some of its interests are bigger?
I would say that the Czech Republic, and basically all the V4 countries, but speaking for the Czech Republic, they should just realize what I have mentioned, that they should not be leaving V4 because V4 is a pragmatic and should be treated as a pragmatic instrument to promote interests in the EU when the four countries have common interests, while it should pragmatically not be used when they don't have common interests. So this realization should happen, and this also means that the voices about leaving V4 or aligning more strongly with the V4 are, you know, misled from my point of view, because they somehow misunderstand the logic of the V4 really as being a pragmatic instrumental mechanism for cooperation and coordination in forging common positions in the EU when they can be forged. This is probably how, from my point of view, when it comes to the V4's role in the EU, how Czech Republic and Czech diplomacy should approach the V4.
But when it comes to some of the problems that you mentioned with Hungary or Poland, do not some of the other Western states tend to throw the four countries into one bag, so to speak, and see this region in a bad light, generally?
Well, they do. They clearly do. It just suffices to look back to December 2020, when there were last efforts to negotiate the EU's budget, multi-annual financial framework. And Poland and Hungary were the troublemakers because they were very strongly against the link between the EU's budget and the rule of law. And at one point in time, it was seen in West as the position of the V4 countries. And there have been huge efforts by the Slovak president, Zuzana Čaputová, but also by Czech diplomacy to basically make clear that this is not the position of the Czech Republic and Slovakia. This is the position, and therefore not the position of the V4, and that this is the position of Poland and Hungary. And so while there's sometimes are tendencies from the West to put all four countries into one bag, the goal or the homework, I would say, for the Czech and Slovak diplomacy and the diplomacy of any of the four countries is to make clear in such instances that there is no V4 position on the given issue, and to make clear that V4 is really an instrument to forge ad hoc issue-based coalitions in EU policymaking, and it's not an overarching, permanent body that has a common position on all EU political issues.
Would you say that there are natural leaders in the V4 group, or does it depend on the government in place at the given time?
I would say you do have... I wouldn't say they are natural leaders, but, you know, Poland, following the logic that it's the largest member state of the V4, and it's quite larger than Czech Republic and Slovakia and Hungary combined, is a natural leader in terms of really having the strongest voice in the EU. Recently, Hungary and Poland also tried to become leaders in a sense that they started to instrumentalize V4 to promote their national domestic political positions. And this was clearly bad for Czech Republic and Slovakia. And this is clearly related to the Hungarian and Polish, I would say, aggressive strategies against the EU. So you may speak of those, you know, leaders or having leaders at a certain point in time, but more important for the overall development of the V4 is the logic of rotating presidencies. So you can clearly see that you have natural leaders following the rotating presidencies. Recently, it was the Czech Republic, and you know, it goes on as the four countries rotate. So this is the natural logic of leadership. And as I said, the diplomacies of the countries who, for instance, sometimes dislike that other V4 members are using V4 to promote their domestic or national political interests should make clear to Europe that this is not a V4 position and should try to distance from such instrumentalization of the V4 by particular countries.
Has the Visegrad Group contributed to stability in Central Europe?
Well, it's a hard question from my point of view. It definitely contributed to stability by helping the four countries integrating into Euro-Atlantic structures such as NATO and the EU. So I would clearly say that in this sense, it helped, it strengthened stability in Central Europe. But it also, from my point of view, helped the stability of the four countries in terms of building, nurturing, forging regional cross-border cooperation at the societal level, at the level of students, scholars, NGO cooperation, so civil society cooperation. So we can basically divide it between the macro level, stabilizing Central Europe by integrating those countries into the Euro-Atlantic structures that I mentioned, and we can also speak about stabilizing it at the micro, the societal level, by, you know, helping cross-border, regional and cross-country exchange at the societal level in the region.
What are the outlooks for the future? Where do you see the Visegrad Group in 10 years' time? Will it still be around?
I guess it will. My forecast would be that we will still have V4 as it survived the standstill between 2004 and 2010. I believe that it will survive for a longer period of time. And I believe that there will be reasons for the V4 to exist. Because if you look at the V4, the V4's role through the perspective of the Czech, you know, for European or Central European foreign policy, the V4 is one of the anchors of the Czech Central European foreign policy, together with bilateral relations with Germany, and for the reasons that I have mentioned previously. So I believe that it will remain this anchor of Czech, and not only Czech, but speaking of the Czech Republic, the Czech Central European foreign policy, and therefore it will still have a reason to exist. I also believe that because of the role of the International Visegrad Fund, the V4 group will have reason to exist, and especially when it comes to, for instance, the broadening or expansion of the scholarships and grants from the International Visegrad Fund, not only in Central Europe, but to the Western Balkans, to Eastern Europe. This will probably give it another reason. And the International Visegrad Fund today is a very important financial scheme to promote scholars, students, civil society cooperation in the region. And lastly, I also believe that the V4 will remain in place for one simple reason, and this is it will be increasingly more understood as a pragmatic instrument to promote common interests in the EU of the four countries, you know, helping them to coordinate and create ad hoc issue-based coalitions and joint positions in the EU, in the EU's policymaking, on issues where they have common interests, where their interests align. So for those reasons, I believe that there will be no large-scale change to how the V4 operates or what does it mean. And there's going to be simply some kind of, you know, inertia in terms of how it will operate.
Jan Kovács from the Prague-based Institute of International Relations, thank you very much for your time, Mr. Kovács. Thank you.
Thank you for your time as well.
And that report by Daniela Lazarová brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague International. If you have any comments about the program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franjková. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.